The author John Sherrill told a story about a stop he made at a place near El Paso called the Lord's Ranch. The Lord's Ranch was home for several people who gave themselves in ministry to a group of folks called the Rag Pickers of Juarez. Just across the Mexican border from the Lord's Ranch was the city of Juarez, or is the city of Juarez, Mexico. And a number of people in that city live in the city dump, where they scavenge in the dump for anything that is useful to them or anything that can be sold, anything that can be recycled or has value. And the people who are the rag pickers of Juarez, they live in cardboard houses, and they don't have anything like electricity or running water. And as you can imagine, it gets pretty hot in northern Mexico in the summertime, and it's not unusual for people who live in those cardboard houses, not unusual for them to become dehydrated and even to die from lack of water. And so the people at the Lord's Ranch, they minister to the folks on the city dump in Juarez, and one of the most important things they provide for them is water. Water so that they can live and survive. Clean water so they can be free of disease. The Lord's Ranch sits on top of an aquifer that provides abundant water in that region, and it's really a very unusual place. But they didn't always take care of the water themselves. They didn't always care for it in the ways they needed to and use the blessing of water in the best ways. All of that changed one day, according to Mary Holleran, who was one of the women who worked at the Lord's Ranch. She said one day she was working in the ranch house and a knock came at the back door. It was a young man standing at the door. His clothes were ragged and dirty, and she said the thing that I noticed about him most was that his lips were parched, and they were so parched and dry that they were cracked and bleeding. And he came to the door, and when I answered the door, he asked me if he could have a glass of water. So I took the tallest glass I had, and I filled it with water from the tap and handed it to him, and he took it, and he drank the water down. All in one drink, he emptied the glass. And then she said, he handed the glass back to me, but when I took it from him, he held on to it for a minute, and when he held on, she said, I looked him in the eyes, and he had the most intense look on his face. And he, when my eyes met his, he said, never, never forget that water is a gift from God. And then she said, he let go of the glass, and I turned back into the kitchen. But then I realized I should offer him some more water. He looked awfully thirsty, or maybe even something to eat. But when I turned back around, he wasn't there. And I walked out onto the porch and into the yard to look for him to see which way he went. And I couldn't find him. And so she said, I got in my car and I drove down the road to follow him and bring him back and give him something to eat. But I couldn't find him. He was gone. It was as if the desert had swallowed him up and he had vanished. So Marianne said, I pulled my car over to the side of the road, and before I returned to the ranch, I realized that the man with the parched lips had come to bring us a message, not just to us, but to everyone. Water is precious. We must remember it is a gift from God. Water is a gift from God. And that, she said, changed the way we regarded water and the way we used water at the Lord's Ranch and the way we shared water with those in need, realizing and understanding that water is God's gift to us. Water is a gift. We can't live without it. They say we need 3 quarts of it every day to fully hydrate our bodies and to live well. We would die much more quickly from thirst than from hunger. The Get My People Going program that Tina mentioned early in the services has as one of its focuses drinking enough water every day. Isn't it ironic, though, that in the time and place where we live, where water is so abundant, we don't have to think about it, much less worry about it. We have plenty of clean, good water, and we take it for granted. We take it for granted so much that we often fail to drink enough of it for our good health. How ironic. Some folks predict that the next great wars that will be fought across the face of the earth will be fought over water. Necessary, important, clean, drinkable water. The people of Israel followed Moses into the desert long time ago. He was going to lead them to the promised land. It should have been a journey that required only a month or two, but it took them 40 years. And you've heard the joke that they could have made it much faster, but being a man, Moses refused to stop and ask directions. No wonder the people were dissatisfied with Moses' leadership. They were weary and they were afraid, but most urgently, they were thirsty. They themselves, their children, even their animals. The situation got so serious that Moses went to the Lord. "What should I do with these people?" he said. "They're almost ready to stone me." That's how deep their distress was. Moses went to the Lord with Israel's complaints, and the Lord told Moses to go to the mountain, to go to Horeb, and to take his rod and strike the rock of the mountain with his rod, and water will come from the rock that the people may drink. What could have been more unlikely? Water from a rock. The last thing you would expect. And yet that's what happened. They went to the great mountain, and Moses struck the rock with his rod, and water poured forth, and God gave the people water. God hadn't brought them out of Egypt into the desert simply to die. God provided for their needs. What they needed at that moment was water. But they had another need that was just as urgent. They needed to be reassured. Reassured that God was still with them. That God had not abandoned them. So God told Moses, strike the rock, and that's what Moses did, and the water poured forth, and their thirst was addressed. But just as important, their confidence in God was buoyed, and they were reminded of God's abiding love and God's care for them. It's an important story, the story of water from the rock in Exodus 17. Water played a different role in Jesus' baptism many years later, still a sign of God's grace, still a sign of God's abiding love and care, but it didn't quench Jesus' thirst. The water at the Jordan River cleansed his soul. Not that Jesus' soul needed cleansing, but the water of baptism helped Jesus to see clearly. It washed away, it took away anything that was blocking or blurring Jesus' vision of God and God's mission for him. The water of Jesus' baptism reassured him of God's abiding presence, of God's abiding love and care for him. And it spurred him onward to the challenging and difficult tasks that lay ahead of him. It's the same with us. In both cases, water nourishes our bodies and water nourishes our souls. And both are necessary for us to live and to live well. God chooses to bring us into the world and to rout us through this wilderness of life, more treacherous for us at some times than others. God's grace claims us and reclaims us over and over again. We don't need to get all balled up about whether we're worthy or adequate for God's grace. With the exception of Jesus, none of us are worthy. And without hope, except in God's sovereign mercy and in God's love for us and in God's intervention with us, none of us are worthy. I heard a colleague tell the story not long ago about something that happened after a service of baptism in the church. On the way home after worship, the brother of the baby who had been baptized that day cried all the way home. He sat in the back seat of the car and he cried the whole way home. Three times his dad asked him what he was crying about. And finally he answered, "Dad, the pastor said that he wanted us all to be brought up in a Christian home. But I want to stay with you guys." We who are baptized, struggle just like everybody else to be decent and good and faithful human beings. We are no more or less tempted than anybody else to be less than God created us to be. But Jesus, our Savior, showed us how to beat the demons back. God gave us the spiritual power to choose a higher and better way. The water from the rock showed the people of ancient Israel the same thing that the waters of baptism showed Jesus, and the same thing that the water shows us. We live inside the promise, and we have the strength that comes to us from God. We have the strength and the promise to live and work for God's good pleasure, because God is with us. Fred Craddock is a preacher and a teacher of preachers, and he wrote a book some years ago that catalogued some of his stories, and it's the Fred Craddock stories are some of the best ones you'll find. And one of them that has always captured my imagination is this one. He says that one summer evening, he and his wife were having dinner at a small restaurant in the Great Smoky Mountains in East Tennessee. And as they were having their dinner, they noticed that there was an elderly man making his way around in the restaurant, just chatting with people. He was an old guy walking with a cane and white hair, a little bit stooped over. Well, eventually, he made it over to the table where Fred and his wife were eating. And he greeted them and said, "What brings you all to these parts?" And Fred explained that he was a preacher and a teacher, and that he had some teaching and preaching to do in that area, and that's why he was there. Well, the old man took that as an invitation to have a seat. He said, "I want to tell you some of my story." And he sat down at the table with them, and he started by saying this: "I grew up around here. This is my home, this part of the country." And he said, "My mother was not married. And the shame that the community directed toward her for being an unmarried mother, that shame was also directed at me. And whenever I went into town with my mother, I could see people staring at us, making gestures at us, talking about us. And I knew what they were doing. They were making guesses about who my daddy might be. At school, I ate lunch by myself most days. In my early teens, I wasn't finding my way through the world very well, and I was doing a lot of things wrong, but I did something right. I began attending a little Methodist church nearby where I lived, but he said, I never stayed all the way through the service. I always left before the service was over because I was afraid somebody would ask me what a boy like me was doing in church. But one day, before I could escape, I felt a hand on my shoulder. It was the pastor. And I turned and I saw him looking at me. He was looking closely at my face. And I knew what he was doing. He was trying to guess who my father was. But he said to me, "Well, boy, you are a child of..." And then he paused. And he caught his breath and he said to me, even more strongly, he said, "Son, you are a child of God. When I look into your face, I see a striking resemblance. I know whose boy you are." And then he swatted me on the bottom and he pushed me toward the door and he said, "Now you go on and claim your inheritance." And that old man said, "That day I left the church a different person than I was when I walked in. In fact, that day was the beginning of my life. And it's been different since then. Since someone told me whose boy I am. That I am a child of God." And then the old man stood up from the table. He was going to move on and talk to the other folks in the restaurant. But before he got away, Fred Craddock said, "I don't believe you told me your name." And he said, "Ben Hooper. My name is Ben Hooper." And off he went to talk to the other folks around the restaurant. And Fred Craddock looked at his wife and he said vaguely, "You know, I remember when I was a kid, my father told me about how the people of the state of Tennessee had twice elected a fellow who had been born out of wedlock as their governor. And I'm sure my dad said his name was Ben Hooper." Children of God, you have received water from the rock, the confidence of God, the love of God, the bounties of God's kingdom, all available to you because you are indeed the children of God, the sons and daughters of God. That's who you are. That's your identity. That's your heritage. So claim your inheritance. Remember that you, like Jesus, have been baptized. The water has fallen upon you and made you clean. It has taken away everything that blocks or blurs your vision of God and God's mission for you. Claim your inheritance, children of God. Take your stand in a challenging and difficult time and claim your inheritance. When you come to the table, as we will do in just a moment, we claim our relationship with the living Christ who is our host. We take our stand with Him, believing that no matter how things look, no matter what appears to be happening in us in our world, God is with us. God never abandons us. God never leaves us alone. Claim your inheritance, sons and daughters of God.